Hare Krishna. So we continue with our discussion on the issue of Nishad. We are discussing about Sambhuti and Vinasha. So Mantra 12 said that when a person worships the Asambhuti, that person Andham Tamah Pravishanti, goes into darkness. And person who worships so-called Sambhuti, that means a concocted conception of the Absolute Truth, that person goes into deeper darkness. Now this verse is going to contrast the two. It says one result is obtained by the worship of Sambhuti and another by the result of by the worship of Asambhuti. So let's look at this verse. So it is said, Anya devahu sambhavad, anyadahura sambhavat, iti shushrumadhiranam, yenastad vichachakshire. So anyad evahu sambhavat. Ahu means it is said, certainly eva, by them it is said, anyad, one particular, sambhavat, by the worship of sambhavat, by the worship of the eternal, one result is obtained. Anyad ahur asambhavat, by the worship of that which is not eternal, some other result is obtained. Iti shushruma dhiranam, this is what I have heard from the dhira, shushruma dhiranam, yenastad vichachakshire, those who have perfectly explained it. So it is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and that another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. So now let us look at Srila Prabhupada's purport. So basically, now Srila Prabhupada is giving a little longer purports for these mantras. So there are 16 paragraphs in this purport. So first thing Srila Prabhupada says is, this verse clearly says different paths lead to different results. One path, one result, another path, another result. So therefore, Dhira exposes folly of all paths lead to the same goal. And analyzing this will be the main theme of the purport and the class. So after exposing the folly of that, then Dhira teaches Shastra. What does Shastra say? Different paths lead to different goals. So we have to choose the right path and then we'll get to the right goal. Then accept Krishna as Sambhavad. So what are the paths now? One is that we accept Krishna as the Absolute Truth. Then what will happen? Yes. This is what Arjuna did. And then Arjuna, what did he? Prabhupada says he killed his so-called relatives to satisfy Krishna. That means for the satisfaction of Krishna, one is ready to do anything. No, if somebody doesn't accept Krishna as Sambhavad, then the person will choose an entirely different course of action. What is the course of action? People are my God, somebody may say. As we discuss, Manav Seva hai, Madhav Seva hai. We will discuss elaborately. Or I am God, that is Mayavad, which we discussed earlier also. We will discuss it a little bit today also. Now, hearing from Dhira helps one and all to attain perfection. So let us look over these points now. Firstly, do all paths lead to the same goal? We will look at this from the logical point of view, from the scriptural point of view, and then from the practical point of view, the cultural point of view. So now Srila Prabhupada's standard example for refuting this was that if one sits, say, in Mumbai, one train is going to Chennai, another is going to Delhi, another is going to Calcutta. So now, will it be that all the trains will lead to the same destination? No, because actually they are all trains going in different directions. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada says, how can all paths lead to the same goal? These paths are different and these paths take people in different directions. The impersonalists may refute that this is a wrong example. Because actually, do you think that the Absolute Truth is limited? Like one small place like Delhi or Calcutta or Chennai. The Absolute Truth is everywhere. The Absolute Truth is in Delhi also, Calcutta also, Chennai also. Therefore, this is a false example. Now, when the impersonalists say like this, they are actually not understanding the thrust of the example. The thrust of the example is not whether the Absolute Truth is limited or unlimited. The thrust is whether the path to the Absolute Truth is a particular path, or by doing anything in life, one can go to the Absolute Truth. Does one have to evolve one's consciousness in a particular way so that one can go to the Absolute Truth? For example, Srila Prabhupada was asked this question once in America after a university program. Swamiji, I don't know the verse, but I've heard that the Bhagavad Gita says, whatever we do, ultimately we'll go back to God. So Srila Prabhupada replied, if whatever we do, we are to go back to God, then why would God have to speak the Bhagavad Gita? We would do whatever we wanted to do and we would go back to Him. But Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita in which He tells this. If you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. Machitta sarva durgani mat prasadat tarishyasi atachetta mahankaran nashroshyasi vinangshyasi. Krishna says, if you become conscious of Me in 18.58, you'll cross over all obstacles by My grace. If, however, you do not become conscious of Me, you will be lost. So Krishna is clearly telling two paths, two consequences. So Krishna doesn't teach this. So yes, it is true that the absolute truth is unlimited. But that doesn't mean whatever we do, we will go to the absolute truth. Why? Because the absolute truth is perceived at a particular level of consciousness. If our consciousness is not tuned to that level, then although the absolute truth is all pervading, we cannot perceive the absolute truth. So there are three modes of material nature. There is ignorance, passion and goodness. And beyond that, there is transcendence. So only if our consciousness is moving towards transcendence, can we perceive transcendental reality. Otherwise, transcendental reality will remain inaccessible to us. So the thrust of the example is not the nature of the destination. The thrust of the example is the reality that different paths are going to take us to different kinds of consciousness, and not all kinds of consciousness are equal when it comes to perceiving, realizing or relishing the presence of the absolute truth. And this is not just based on logic, this is also based on scripture. Before we go to scripture, to understand that the absolute truth is ultimately a person. And when we talk about a person, when we want to go close to a person, then there are certain things which we have to do. Now if I want to become closer to my spouse, then I have to know what his or her likes and dislikes are, and then accordingly change my behavior. Similarly, Supreme Lord is a person, and relationships require commitment. Krishna is the Supreme Person, then actually, if people work so hard to try to win the favor of some ordinary person, how much more we need to strive to win the form a relationship with the Supreme Person. Supreme Lord is very merciful and very accessible, but still He is a person, and He needs to be approached as a person. And approaching Him as a person means that we understand what are His likes and dislikes and act accordingly. Now, Krishna's likes and dislikes are not arbitrary. As far as the principles of devotional service are concerned, at least with respect to purification of our consciousness from the lower modes to the higher modes, what Krishna likes is also for our ultimate good. So the more we do the things that are pleasing to Krishna, the more we become purified, elevated, and we become happier, and ultimately we get liberated. So now let's look at the scriptural reference. Now, if the scriptures use, if the scriptures are going to say that all paths lead to the same goal, then the scriptures would not use repeated instruction by contrast. Instruction by contrast means that the scriptures tell, if you do this, this will happen, and that will happen. Now, this has been done in the Isha Upanishad itself. This particular mantra that we are taking, this was preceded by a similar mantra earlier with respect to Vidya and Avidya. Anyadevahu sambhavat, anyadevahu vidyaya, anyadahu ravidyaya. So just like it was, here it was, sambhavat and asambhavat. So the Isha Upanishad making clear, if you do this, this is going to happen, if you do this, this is going to happen. So similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, so many occasions. We'll just look at a few occasions over here. So, in the third chapter, in the fourth chapter, Krishna is talking about faith. And in 31, 32, he says that if you have faith, what will happen? And if you don't have faith, what will happen? In 31, he says, Ye me matamidam nityam atishtanti manava shaddhavanto anasuyanto ucchante te pikilvisha. He says, if you have faith in me and follow my instructions, you'll become free from all sinful reactions. On the other hand, in 32, he says, Ye tvetadabhyasuyanto nanutishtanti me matam sarva jnana vimudham stvam vidhinashtana chetasaha. If one is envious of me, one doesn't have faith in me, then whatever knowledge one acquires, that will all be lost. Why? Because the consciousness is misdirected. So Krishna has cleared it in two parts, two consequences. And similarly, 4.39.40 also, Krishna says something similar. In 39, first he says, what will happen by faith? Shraddhava labhate jnanam tatpara sanyate indriyaha jnanam labha param shantim achirena adhigachyati. This is, if you have Shraddha, labhate jnanam, you get jnana, and jnana will lead to param shanti. Achirena adhigachyati, you will get supreme peace and quickly you will get it. Now, on the other hand, he says, if one doesn't have faith, akyascha shraddhadhanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti naparo nasukham samshayatmanaha. He says that if one doesn't have faith, one will get happiness neither in this world nor in the next world. And then, after that, again in 16.23.24, he talks about one who follows Shastra and one who does not follow Shastra. So first he says, one who does not follow Shastra. So, in 3.31 and 4.39, he told the positive first and the negative later. But in 16.23 and 24, first he tells the positive and then he tells the negative. First he tells the negative and then he tells the positive. In 20, so 23 he first says, those who do not follow Shastra, Iha Shastra Vidhim Utsrujya Vartate Shraddhayanvita Vartate Kamakarataha Asa Siddhim Avapnoti Nasukham Naparamgatim. So one who gives up Shastra and Vartate Kamakarataha, act only out of their own selfish desires, Nasa Siddhim Avapnoti, they will get no Siddhi, they will not attain perfection, Nasukham, they will not get happiness, Naparamgatim, nor will they ever get the supreme destination. And therefore, Krishna says, this is not the path that you should follow. What is the path you should follow? Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavasthitam Gyatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karma Kartum Iharasi. Therefore, O Arjuna, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te, understand what is Shastra. And Karya Karya Vyavasthitam, understand what is the Karya to be done, what is the Karya not to be done. Gyatva Shastra Vidhanoktam, understanding what is the Vidhan of Shastra, Karma Kartum Iharasi. Act accordingly. In 18.58 we already discussed. Now let's look at 9.25. This is an important verse from the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about, we discussed this briefly earlier, but we'll discuss it once again. 9.25 is, Yanti deva vrata devan pitran yanti pitravrataha bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti mad yajinopi maam. That one who worships devatas goes to devatas. This is actually talking about overall goodness worship. Bhutaniyanti bhutejya. As far as pitranyanti pitravrajaha, those who worship in the mode of passion, they worship the ancestors, they go to the ancestors. Those who worship in the ignorance, that is bhutas, they go to the bhutas. And those who worship me come to me. So Krishna is in one verse giving four different trajectories. What can be clearer? What can be more unambiguous? It's very, very clear what Krishna is telling over here. He's telling that different paths will lead to different goals. All paths do not lead to the same goal. So where does this idea that all paths lead to the same goal come from? It comes from a desire to try to simplify complex issues. Actually, to try to water down complexity and try to make things simple. Now, even when those things are not simple, when one tries to artificially make them simple, it leads to misunderstanding. Certainly, things should not be made more complicated than what they are. But at the same time, we cannot make things artificially simplistic. So a student has to evolve. A teacher should not make things more complex than what they are. But a KG student cannot understand calculus. And if a doctorate level or senior college level calculus has to be studied, the student has to evolve. You cannot simplify the subject beyond a particular level. The truths themselves are complex. So it could be a simplistic wish of people that actually, you know, all paths, whatever you want to do, you follow that path, I follow my path. We'll all be happy, there'll be no conflict. So this desire is good. So now, but this desire may be good, but it just doesn't work. So we'll look at the cultural nature of this desire, but let's look at one more verse, which is often used by the impersonalist to support the idea that all paths lead to the same goal. This is Gita 4.11. Now many impersonalists interpret it to say all paths lead to the same goal. However, what the verse actually says is all people are on my path. It doesn't say all paths lead to the same goal. Let's look at this verse. It's 4.11. Ye thamam prapadyante tam sathaiva bhajamyaham mama vartamanu vartante manushya partha sarvashah. So it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada quotes more of 4.11 A and B. A and B is ye thamam prapadyante tam sathaiva bhajamyaham. He quotes more of ye yathamam prapadyante, as all people surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So he focuses on this principle of reciprocation. And when we study the Bhagavad Gita, we'll look at this verse in much more detail. But suffice it to say, the emphasis of this verse is what? That Krishna is reciprocal. If somebody surrenders to him with pure devotion, he rewards that person an eternal destination. If somebody approaches him with the material motivation, Krishna reciprocates accordingly, giving him whatever that person desires. So that is the thrust which Srila Prabhupada uses. The Mayavadis thrust the next part. What is the next part? Mama vartamanu vartante. That mama vartama anuvartante. Mama is my, vartama is path. Anuvartante is to follow. Manushyaha, people, partha sarvashaha. So all people, O partha, so sarvashaha manushya, mama vartama anuvartante. All people, O partha, follow my path. So, as Prabhupada translates it, everyone follows my path in all respects. So now, actually speaking, this verse really cannot be interpreted to mean all people are on my path. That all paths lead to the same goal. Because if we look at the verse, what is it saying? The sarvashaha is clearly applied to manushyaha. It is not applied to vartama. It is not talking about all paths, it is talking about all people. All people are on my path. Mama vartama. It is not sarvashaha vartama. My path, all people. So Krishna is not saying all paths followed by all people will come to me. He is saying all people are on my path. Now what does it mean when we say all people are on my path? That's a very profound truth. Actually, different people are attracted to different things in the world. So materialistic people are attracted to materially good looking or good feeling things. Religious people are attracted to different devatas. Atheistic people are attracted to their own intellectual ideas about atheism. Drunkards are attracted to alcohol. Sports lovers are attracted to sports. Devotees are attracted to Krishna. Now all these people have different things that they are attracted to. But actually whatever a person is attracted to, that attractiveness is ultimately a spark of Krishna's all attractiveness. Krishna talks about this in 10.41 in the Bhagavad Gita, that yat yat vibhuti matsatvam shrimadurjitam evam tattadevavagachyatvam mamatejomsha sambhava. He says that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. So Krishna says over here that actually all people are attracted to me, but they do not know that they are attracted to me. And when they are attracted to my sparks, then they do not come to me by attraction to my sparks. If a man is attracted to the beauty of a woman, then that attraction the beauty of a woman is not just her beauty. It may be temporarily under her possession, but that is ultimately the arrangement of Krishna. If a sports fan is attracted to a brilliant batsman, that talent is of that player temporarily. When that person grows old, when that person becomes sickly, that person cannot play the same way. So that attractiveness is given to that person by Krishna. Of course, because of the past karma of that person. And certainly, the present hard work may also be involved in the person's expertise. But the point is, that spark of attractiveness ultimately comes from Krishna. So, in that sense, whatever anyone is attracted to, that person is attracted to Krishna. However, when a person is attracted to alcohol, that attraction to alcohol doesn't take the person to Krishna. That takes the person away from Krishna. On the other hand, the person is attracted to Krishna and then performs bhakti and the person goes to Krishna. So all people are on my path means all people are attracted to me in my various manifestations. But based on that, some are going towards me, some are going away from me. So therefore, what is important to understand is that ultimately all of us have to become attracted not to the sparks but to the whole. So the sparks are also coming from Krishna, their attractiveness is coming from Krishna, but that doesn't take us towards Krishna because we don't see the Krishna connection of the sparks with the whole. Only when we see that connection, then we will not get so much fascinated, infatuated and distracted by the sparks, but we'll concentrate our attraction on the whole and then we can go back to the whole. So this verse is talking about a far deeper philosophical truth. It is not a simplistic idea that all paths lead to the same goal. And as I said, the Bhagavad Gita and so many other verses, as we just briefly discussed, is talking clearly that all paths don't lead to the same goal. So now if logically, scripturally, the idea is that all paths don't lead to the same goal, then why is it that people substantiate such an idea? So let's look at it from a socio-cultural perspective now. So in general, there can be three broad paths. So first is the path called exclusivism. Exclusivism is the idea that my way is the only right way. Exclusive. Exclusive means only, like some, say, television company says, we have got doing exclusive coverage of the World Cup. Means we are only doing it, nobody else is doing it. So some people or some religions, some paths, they claim that we have exclusive rights to God. So they say you can go back to God only by following our path and by no other path. Now this sort of reduction of God to a monopolized commodity in the religious marketplace is something which alienates intelligent people. No, if God is great, God is the father of all living beings, why would God be restricted to one path? Most of the Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Judaism and Islam, they all are based on this idea, exclusivist idea, that ours is the only way back to God. And that is one main reason why people get alienated from religion. It just stinks with narrow-mindedness. This idea that ours is the only way to God. And then, as a reaction, often a knee-jerk reaction to that, or as an instinctive, fanciful reaction to that, people go to the other extreme. The other extreme is what? It's called as pluralism. Pluralism is all ways are right. All ways are right is just another way of saying all paths lead to the same goal. So all ways are right. Now this seems, especially in a time when we have multiculturalism, there are practically every country there are people from different religions. In the past, in the West, for example, there was only Christianity, and people basically could either be, at least in the recent past, people could either be Christians or they're considered pagans, atheists. But now in practically every country there are many religions, and the idea that only one of these religions is the right religion, all other religions are wrong, that seems to be very culturally alienating, and that can lead to a lot of conflicts. So people say that in order to avoid conflicts, you know, we should believe your path is right and my path is right. So in fact, some people go to the extreme and they say that actually there are as many religions as there are human beings. That means every human being has his or her own religion. So now this is quite a appealing idea as far as this appeal in broad-mindedness goes. Because it seems, oh, it is so tolerant, it's so broad-minded. You know, you follow your religion, I'll follow my religion. Now we certainly should be broad-minded, we certainly should be open-minded, but we can't be so open-minded that our brains fall out. What does that mean? That essentially means that actually open, in the name of tolerance, we shouldn't quote impotence. What is the meaning of tolerance actually leading to impotence? See, all of us are in a sick condition right now. The great religions of the world, whatever be their differences, they do agree that we have to develop love for God. And they tell us that when we get attached to material things, to this worldly things, then that will distract us from God, and we should not get infatuated by these things. And going back to God, loving God, is the ultimate goal of life. This is the broad teaching of the great theistic religions of the world. Now, if we say all paths are right, and the fundamental problem that comes is that, okay, one of the paths will be atheism. So if atheism is right, just because all paths are right, so atheism is also one of the paths, and atheism is right. Now if atheism is right, then what happens? All the religious paths become wrong. Because all the religions are asking us to surrender to God, and atheism says there is no God. And if atheism is right and there is no God, then all the religious ideas about going to God become wrong. So even from simple logic, actually all paths can't be right. So then, is there some criteria? How do we decide? Now, exclusivism smacks of narrow-mindedness. But pluralism smacks of zero-mindedness. So zero-minded means there's no intelligence only in the idea that all paths lead to the same goal. It's basically, if you are in a diseased condition, then there can be different treatments. Your patient can choose Ayurveda or allopathy or homeopathy or naturopathy. There are different kinds of treatment that the person may try out. But essentially, it's not that everything that a patient does is a treatment. If the patient starts taking the very foods that cause the disease, and he says, this is my variety of treatment, that will not work. Why will that not work? Because the disease will become worse. So the essence of treatment should be, even if there are differences in the various treatments, the essential point is that those treatments should make the patient healthy. And the signs of health should be true across different systems of medicine. So for example, the person gets the energy back, the person's face regains its light and energy, and then in the different kinds of medical reports, basically the reports come out well. So there are objective criteria by which one can understand that the person has become healthy. So the essential point here is that although there can be multiple treatments, that does not mean that everything that the patient does is a treatment. So what is the criteria for deciding what is a treatment and what is not a treatment? That is essentially the objective criteria of whether the patient's health is improving. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada would say that actually there is the objective criteria for whether a person is developing love for God. And that's why Srila Prabhupada was so broad in his approach that when some Christian priest came and asked him, what is your opinion about Jesus Christ? And Prabhupada said, he's our guru. They are very surprised to see what they consider to be a Hindu Swami saying that Jesus is our guru. How is that? Jesus Christ had so much love for God that he was ready to lay down his life for the service of God. So such a person who has so much love for God, that person is definitely our guru. So Srila Prabhupada had this broad vision. So the criteria for Jesus to decide was, for Prabhupada to decide was, that whether a person has love for God. So then, between these two extremes of exclusivism and pluralism, there is an intermediate balance stage, which is called as inclusivism. Inclusivism means there is one way with various levels on it. Various levels means that there people can be approaching God at different levels, different motivations, different conceptions. So depending on that, the levels will be there. But ultimately there is one way. So mama vartamanu vartante manushyah partha sarvashah. Mama vartamanu vartante means that all people are following my path. Mama vartma, my path. That means there is one path, but on that path people are going down or going up. So with respect to medicine, there is basically one path. The path where one person is going towards health, or the person is going away from health towards sickness. Now the within that one broad trajectory, to go up that trajectory or to go down that trajectory, there can be different specific routes. So one can choose, say, we can call these as different lanes. One can choose the Ayurveda lane, one can choose the allopathy lane, one can choose the naturopathy lane. But the point is, one should be becoming healthier. So Srila Prabhupada said that we have not come here to convert people from one religion to another religion. Now, our goal is not to convert a Christian into a Hindu or a Muslim into a Hindu. Our goal is to actually make people into lovers of God. So if there's any conversion, it is not from materialism, from one religion to another religion. It is from materialism to spirituality. Changing people from being lovers of material things to lovers of God. That is the goal. And whichever path by which this happens, we accept that path as bona fide. And if that is not happening, then that path is not bona fide. So there is objective criteria over here, and when that objective criteria is understood, then people can move forward steadily on that criteria. But if people don't understand their criteria and sentimentally think that all paths lead to the same goal, then actually they will equate sickness with health. And they may be becoming sicker and sicker, and imagining that we are on the same path as others and we are becoming healthier and healthier. That will not work. So therefore, what is important is we have to understand the criteria, objective criteria, and see whether a person is moving upwards towards love of God on that criteria. And if that is not happening, then that is not a path that takes us to God. So now, from the socio-cultural point of view, today's predominant ethos favors pluralism. You have your path, I have my path. Yato mat tato path. That whichever path you want to follow, you follow. And as many opinions, that many paths. But actually, this is not based on scripture, because there is an objective criteria for improving one's spiritual health. Now, we do appreciate the point. So are we as devotees exclusivists? No. Srila Prabhupada was asked in a Les Cranes show, he and Mukunda Goswami Maharaj at that time, Michael Grant, Mukunda Prabhu, they had gone for this show. So Prabhupada and his desired student was there, and there was a Christian priest. And his student was there. And both of them, they had a sort of discussion. It was basically meant to be like a popular populist pandering confrontation between two religious teachers. And that person asked, the host asked the Christian priest, you know, so this person is a Hindu. And this person, his holy book is Bhagavad Gita. He didn't even know the word Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it, Swami? Yeah, Prabhupada just nodded. And he says, so if he follows his book, will he go back to God? So the priest remained silent, he said. He didn't say anything. So he will go back to God, he remained silent. And then he came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, so he follows the Bible. By following the Bible, will he go back to God? Prabhupada said yes. Follows the message of God and develops love for God, then he'll go back to God. So then he came back in front of all the people and he says, oh, so this Swami says that by following the Bible, you will go back to God. But do you say that you following the Bhagavad Gita, you'll go back to God? He says, the path back to God is very narrow. You have to follow the Bible to go back to God. So, According to you, you will not go back to God? So, no, those who follow the Bible will go back to God. See, then this is the narrow-mindedness of people. So now, this idea that Prabhupada, when he said that people who follow Christianity can go back to God, what does it mean? The criteria is that people have to develop love for God. Then they will go back to God. So, it's not just affiliation with a particular institution that takes us back to God. It is the purification of the heart that takes us back to God. And of course, certain paths, certain institutions can facilitate us in developing love for God. So, Srila Prabhupada, if somebody was following Christianity nominally, just born in a Christian family, not really following Christianity very seriously, then Prabhupada would tell us, chant Hare Krishna, practice Krishna consciousness. And the rap, so because this is Yuga, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is there, the Yuga Dharma or the chanting of the holy names is there, so we can develop love of God very fast. It's a very swift and effective treatment process. But somebody, if somebody was a committed Christian, Srila Prabhupada would not try to convert them, Christianity come. Prabhupada would inspire them to follow Christianity with more serious commitment. He would encourage people to follow thou shalt not kill, to rise to the level of vegetarianism. So the idea is, if somebody is outside lying on the streets and is sick, we will invite them to come to our hospital and get treated. But our goal is not, if somebody is taking medicine in some other hospital, our goal is not to break into that hospital, destroy that hospital and pull people from that hospital and bring to our hospital. No, that is not our goal. That is the idea of exclusivist religions, which consider our religion the only religion and all other religions are false. So, they will break other people's temples, they will break other people's what they consider as false gods, and they may even persecute and kill people who are following other religions, and in that way they will try to attract people or force people to accept their path. They will try to monopolize the religious marketplace. For them it's basically a marketplace, and they consider all other competition to be ungodly. So that is not our understanding. Now, within this understanding of the broad hierarchy, that there are different levels, and the more a person has developed love for God, the more that person is advanced. And the path that helps a person develop love for God, that is a bona fide path. Other paths are not. So when we have this broad understanding, then we can move forward to actually try for communal harmony. Communal harmony will not come by simply whitewashing all paths as good. That is the current idea. In the name of liberalism, whatever you follow, that is good. So, that, however, is not the truth. We have to understand that different paths will have different consequences. So now sometimes, now we come to the question of impersonalism. Now, if impersonalism doesn't lead to criticism of bhakti, it doesn't lead to offense towards Bhagavan, then impersonalism is also a progress in the spiritual path. Because many impersonalists follow certain principles, they respect Vedic culture, they respect the Veda, they respect the cow, they respect the deities, at least many of them. And that way, they are also coming to some level of goodness. So now, the problem is, if they start offending the Supreme Lord, then they become, in many ways, more hostile to the devotional culture, like I discussed in the previous class, how they start minimizing and criticizing devotional service in order to talk about social service positively. That is unfortunate. And that is undesirable. So, we have to see based on consequence. Now, we discussed how in theory, in principle, Mayavad can be so detrimental to spiritual life. And Mayavadis have this idea that ultimately all paths lead to the same goal, because they have the idea that they want to unite everyone. So they say that, okay, you worship your devata, you worship that devata, you worship that devata. And they say that, okay, other religions also like that. They are worshipping some other god. Muslims are doing something else. They are doing something else. And all these ultimately lead to the same one, Supreme Brahman. Supreme, that is the Brahman. So now, this idea, of course, is not exactly scriptural. Because the idea is, one has to have a particular conception of God as a supreme being. And then one worships that supreme being, then one will make spiritual advancement and return back to that Lord. So the impersonalist idea, we'll have to look at the consequences to evaluate it. Now Srila Prabhupada makes very strong statements about impersonalism, because it can have very harmful consequences. At the same time, when Srila Prabhupada would deal with people, No, he was warm, he was cordial, he was gentlemanly. When Srila Prabhupada was staying with Dr. Mishra in the Mishra Yoga Studio in New York, at that time they were completely a philosophical loggerheads. You know, this Dr. Mishra was talk about impersonal Mayavad based on Shankara's teachings, and Srila Prabhupada would contradict that. But still, Srila Prabhupada was so cordial that Srila Prabhupada would not only sit and talk with him on friendly terms, Srila Prabhupada would cook for him and feed him. And so, you know, our philosophical differences should not make us arrogant or culturally insensitive in ways that can be counterproductive for our outreach. So, for example, Srila Prabhupada would use the word fools and rascals sometimes. Now, if you look at it, generally Srila Prabhupada would use these words, these strong words, in his conversations with a small group of people, the intimate disciples. And for them, he wanted to make things very clear. This is right, this is wrong. And he wanted to make things clear, so he did that. But Srila Prabhupada himself was cautious. These kinds of words in the purports come very, very less. And purports are his primary authority. In fact, there is a letter in 1976 where a disciple wrote to Srila Prabhupada saying that I want to transcribe all your letters. Sorry, I want to transcribe all your lectures so that I can understand your teachings better. And Srila Prabhupada's reply is there. Prabhupada is saying, as far as your desire is concerned, I think it is prayas, it is unnecessary. Whatever teachings I want to give, I have given them in my purports. You study my purport, that will be enough. So, of course, that doesn't mean that the lecture should not have been transcribed. We have got a valuable legacy of Srila Prabhupada's teachings through his lectures also. But the point is, there is a hierarchy. So, what Srila Prabhupada wanted to be perpetuated essentially was his books with the purports. So, even in the Veda base front, the Jayadvaita Maharaj writes that all Prabhupada's words are authoritative, but at the same time there are levels of authority. So at the topmost is purports. They are more or less universal, are broadest in their appeal. Then there are lectures. Now lectures are often context specific. Srila Prabhupada is speaking in, say, Mumbai. He may be addressing Mumbai specific issues at times. Then below that there are conversations. He may be talking with some people, and again the context might be there. And letters are the most contextual. So the point is that Srila Prabhupada's strong speech is something which he could do because he was old, he had the authority of age, and he most importantly had the authority of purity. There is one beautiful lecture of Srila Prabhupada where Prabhupada, he is saying that, you know, a devotee prays to Krishna, Krishna, all these fools and rascals, they are suffering in material existence, please give me the ability to help all of them to come back to you. So you see here, Prabhupada is using the word fools and rascals not in an angry or arrogant way. He's using it in a compassionate and caring way. Now, when we start using fools and rascals, you know, we don't use it in that way. We use it, he's a fool, he's a rascal. We use it in a very judgmental, condemnatory way. And it, when we use that, it is very doubtful whether there will be compassion in our hearts for those people whom we are condemning as fools and rascals. So, first of all, whether we have the purity of motivation, and secondly, whether we have the potency of transformation. Or Srila Prabhupada could use such strong words, and because he had so much purity, he could actually bring about transformation. So, if we start using such words, then we may well not be able to bring about transformation. In fact, we can alienate people by that. Ultimately, our purpose is to attract people to Krishna. And if by our method of speaking we are driving people away from Krishna, then we are not doing service, we are doing disservice. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 3rd chapter, I think 26th verse, Nabuddhi bhedam janayet agyanam karma sangina joshayet sarva karmani vidvan yukta samachara. It says, Nabuddhi bhedam janayet. Don't disturb the minds of people who are attached. And what you do, joshayet sarva karmani, engage them accordingly and guide them to rise to a higher level of consciousness. So now when we talk about Mayavad, we as devotees use Mayavad as a open-ended term to brand anyone who has the idea of the absolute truth being impersonal. But there is a huge variety of people within that. There are hardline Mayavadis who are intellectually convinced that the absolute truth is impersonal. They are of they claim to understand scripture, and they quote scripture, of course misinterpreting it for their purposes, but they are convinced Mayavadis. And they are few. They are there, no doubt, but they are few. But beyond that, there is a large number of people who are simply under Mayavad influence. That means those people have not really given any serious thought to Mayavad. Whatever they have read from various auxiliary sources, maybe they saw some movies, or they saw some programs on TV, read some Amar Chitra Katha, or something like that, and find that they have got some idea, oh, we have to merge in the absolute truth. And in general, before Srila Prabhupada preached, most of the prominent Indian spiritual teachers, or those who were considered to be prominent spiritual teachers, they were impersonalists. And if you see, in the Indian history textbooks also, post-independence Indian history is not talked about much. It's only pre-independence Indian history. And then most of the pre-independence spiritual leaders, actually they were national leaders, also spiritual leaders. So they are talked about in favorable light, and most of them were impersonalists. So people don't know so much about Srila Prabhupada. On the other hand, they know about many spiritual teachers who are impersonalists. So these people have not philosophically committed themselves to Mayavad. But emotionally, they have some affection, some attraction for certain leaders, not because they know their teachings, but because they have heard something good about them from various sources. Now, when people come with such notions towards devotees, to Krishna consciousness, and then they may ask, I have read so-and-so Swami's book. And some devotee says, that Swami is a fool and a rascal. Now, people get the shock of their lives. You are a spiritual person. He's a spiritual person. How can one sadhu call another sadhu a fool and rascal like that? He's not a sadhu. He's a sadhu. So that shocks people even further. And then when people get shocked in this way, they basically, what happens to them is, yad gatva nanivartante. Yes, go away and they never come back to Krishna. So, strong preaching doesn't mean that we drive people away from Krishna. Our goal is to get people to Krishna. And I've seen so many devotees speak strongly in the name of following Srila Prabhupada, and the end result is they've driven so many people away from Krishna. So now certainly we don't want to waffle with the truth. That means now there are different degrees. If somebody just mentions some spiritual teacher's name, it's not that immediately we have to pounce and say that person is this. No, we can just gently encourage them. Yes, it is good that you have spiritual inclinations. In this time and age, not many people have spiritual inclinations. If you have spiritual inclinations, that is very good. And if you read Srila Prabhupada's books, if you come to our programs, you get a very systematic spiritual understanding. And so appreciate the person for the spiritual inclination, and then bring that person closer to Krishna. And then, if that person asks, what do you think about this person? Then Srila Prabhupada himself taught his disciple how to deal with it. He said that you just ask that person, what is his philosophy? And most often the people say, no, I don't know the philosophy. So, yes, then fine. And the Bhagavad Gita has given his philosophy, and ultimately Bhagavad Gita is accepted by all the great spiritual teachers in the Vedic culture. So study the Bhagavad Gita, and they will understand what is the essential message. So we can actually use people's spiritual inclination towards whichever spiritual teacher it might have been. That inclination, we can use it to bring them towards Krishna if we handle it sensitively. If we are insensitive, then we will drive those people away from Krishna. See, it's like people are on a particular hill. We are on a taller hill, on a mountain. So that person has a particular faith, present with the present understanding. That person has a particular conception, and that person may have a little faith in a particular spiritual teacher. Little emotional attraction, I cannot even really call it faith. Now, we want that person to come to Krishna. So what we are trying to do is, we have to build a bridge. So by our conduct, by our words, that person should be able to develop faith in us. and through us, faith in Krishna. And when the person develops faith in Krishna, through us and through other devotees, of course, through Srila Prabhupada's teachings, then that person will slowly come across the bridge. And when he comes on the boat of Krishna's message or the mountain which is given Krishna's teachings, and person will steadily advance upward and upwards to Krishna. But when that person is on the bridge, or the person is about to climb the bridge, and then at that time we speak something insensitively, and then what happens? That's the very bridge that person wants to cross. We break the bridge. And the person will forever stay over there only. And what will happen? That person will get lost. You know, when I was in college, at that time, I was among the intellectual leaders in our hostel. There was another young, dynamic boy. He was also spiritually minded, and he was like among the social leaders. So, the program in our college was going on in my hostel. And when the program was going on, I invited him to come for the program. He liked the program. He liked the devotees, and he liked their classes and the prasad. And then I invited him to a temple. So that day, there was a lot of crowd in the temple. So when he came for the festival, somehow I couldn't meet him. Those were the times when we didn't have cell phones. So he came and he met some other devotees. And he had some attraction to some other spiritual teacher. And this boy, he asked that temple devotee, "What do you think about the spiritual teacher?" And this devotee probably had some strange idea of strong preaching. He says, "That person, he will not get place even in hell." My God, this boy was so shocked. He went back to the hostel and he spoke, this is what Hare Krishna says, that such a big spiritual teacher will not even go to hell, he will suffer more. What nonsense, what can I do? Practically the next few weeks, our college program, it just didn't go on because boys stopped coming. We had to do so much firefighting and management and try to calm the damage. And then at the end, what happened? That boy has now become a sannyasi in a Mayavadi mission. So he had spiritual inclination. He could have become a devotee if it just be sensitively handled. He was driven away from devotee. And what was done? That person has now become a leader in a Mayavadi mission. So, of course, in that Mayavadi mission, they don't have brahmachari and sannyas. They just have a short brahmachari and they take sannyas. But he was a person with vigor, with some principles. And instead of getting him towards Krishna, what happened was the strong preaching just drove him deeper into Mayavad. So now when a person hears something like this, see, whenever names come up, whenever persons come up, people's emotions come up immediately. Philosophy doesn't bring people's emotions, but persons bring people's emotions. And as soon as emotions are hurt, when people are criticized by name or by value judgmental statements, then people's emotional filters get closed. And as soon as the emotional filters are closed, then they are just not open to rational discussion. So our goal is not to close their filters. Our goal is to open their filters. Now when they discuss rationally, then they will understand how Mayavad is not the teaching of the Vedic scriptures and how in many ways it goes against the teaching of the Vedic scriptures. But if we don't let people have the opportunity to open their emotional filters, by strong speaking, we close their emotional filters, then we'll drive them away. So we have to be cautious in our preaching. We have the Siddhanta, and first of all, we ourselves should be convinced that Mayavad is harmful. Now, at the same time, we also have to understand that philosophically, there is a lot wrong with Mayavad, but still culturally, it is good that people, even because of under Mayavadi influences, often they have some sympathy. They have some sympathy for spiritual, for Vedas, for deities, for cows. So that is, at some levels also it is good. It may not definitely be the best. It is not the best, by far not the best. But still, as devotees, we should also be able to see good in others. And because of just insensitivity in the name of strong speaking, we can alienate a lot of people. So we have to carefully get people to Krishna's lotus feet. That means we speak things in such a way that their faith in us becomes stronger than their faith in whoever they were earlier connected to. So only when that happens, then they will be able to understand what we are saying. So initially, gentle Prabhupada said, my disciples, my devotees are defined by, they are perfect gentlemen. and ladies. So we have to behave sensitively and gradually help them build a bridge by which they can come to us. So one is that we break the bridge before they can come to us. Second is that after they are coming on the bridge, that time we break the bridge. Then they will just fall down to nowhere. That means what? They have some faith in some spiritual teacher. They are coming to Krishna. And at that time, right in the middle, we create a big confrontation. And the people start feeling, no, these spiritualists, they are all fighting among themselves. Better not have any business with them only. I'll be happy in my material life. And what have we done? We have not done any service to them. So our goal is not just to do strong preaching. The test of strong preaching is not the strength of the words that we speak. The test of strong preaching is a strong transformation in the heart of people that we are able to bring about. And that strong transformation often comes not by strong speech, but by sensitive, respectful speech, accompanied by careful explanation, cultured behavior, and love and care. So our goal is to get people closer and closer to Krishna. And how we do it, we'll have to do it very sensitively. Srila Prabhupada often said that if you drive people away from Krishna, then that is not a service to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's example of using fools and rascals should not be misrepresented. There are many other places where Srila Prabhupada has spoken very sensitively also. When he was talking with George Harrison, George Harrison was such a famous person during his time that many spiritual leaders were connected with him. And when he met Srila Prabhupada, in their conversation, only a part of their conversation is there in chant and be happy. If you go to the Vedabhyas, the full conversation is there. And there you will find that George Harrison mentions many spiritual teachers. You know, he says this and he says that. And Prabhupada makes no comments about them at all. Prabhupada says, okay. Prabhupada just continues speaking Krishna consciousness non-committally. And come to Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada speaks vigorously, encourages him, and he became a devotee. So we should. Prabhupada has used different strategies at different times. Sometimes he may come out and, boom, fools and rascals, he may say. There are other times when he has spoken quite differently. So now, Srila Prabhupada is like a warrior. And a warrior sees the situation and decides which weapons to use. When we want to follow in Prabhupada's statements, it is not the specific strategy that matters. It is the same result that matters. Prabhupada was able to get people to Krishna, and we should also be able to get people to Krishna. So most people today are under Mayavad influence. They are not Mayavadis. And people who are under Mayavad influence, they can be brought into Vaishnava influence. They can be brought into devotee influence and made into devotees if they are dealt with sensitively and respectfully and shown love and care. And there is careful explanation and cultured behavior overall. So by this, we can also get many, many people to Krishna and fulfill Krishna's mission of reclaiming the conditioned souls who are misled by various philosophies. So to summarize, we discussed today about whether different paths lead to different goals. We discussed how logically trains going to different directions won't go to the same destination. People who are doing different activities, which will lead their consciousness in different directions, won't be able to perceive the same absolute truth. And then we discuss scripturally how scriptures again and again teach by contrasting. Ishopanishad 10 and 13, then Bhagavad Gita, we discussed 3.31, 32, 4.39, 40, 16.23, 24, 18.58, and especially 9.25. Then we discuss Bhagavad Gita 4.11. The verse is not saying all paths lead to me. It says that all people are on my path. And then we discussed about exclusivism, inclusivism, pluralism. How the Vedic path doesn't say that only our path is right, nor does it say that all paths are right. It says that there is one path and the progress or regress on that path is dependent on objective criteria. How much love of God one is developing or how much love of material things one is developing. It's like a patient can follow different treatments, but the test is one has to become cured. So philosophically, we have to be convinced that all paths don't lead to the same goal. But at the same time, most people today are under Mayavad influence and they know so many different spiritual organizations. They are more or less think that, okay, all spiritual organizations teach the same thing. That's not true. But they have some respect for all spiritual teachers. And now if we become dismissive in the name of following Srila Prabhupada, then we can alienate a lot of people. So we have to build a bridge by which people can come to Krishna. Not break the bridge before they can start coming on the bridge. So by carefully guiding the souls to come to Krishna, we can fulfill Krishna's mission of reclaiming all the souls and taking them back to his lotus feet. Thank you very much. Sri Shopanishad ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bo. Thank you.